Okay.
But is this where you usually stay?
I usually don't sit here. I'm in the shelter.
Oh, okay.
But I've been out in the from the shelter for a little while.
Okay, for sure. Why have you been out from the shelter?
Huh?
Why out from the shelter?
Oh, I have a problem, you know. They don't allow my sleeping bag. They allow their own blankets. There are some restrictions that I can't. I'm also a substance user.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just having a little problem, so I just took out for a few weeks.
It starts with just taking that leap.
Man, you have to work hard. You have to be incredibly smart.
Choose something that even if it fails, you are going to be proud of it.
Doesn't matter how badly you got beaten down.
Be kind, be kind, be kind.
Become a better person, a better leader, a better business.
Go with your gut.
I'm Samuel Donner, and this is Finding Founders.
How's it going, dude? Nice to meet you. Hey.
Apex influence on homelessness can most notably be seen from the increased sweeps the police are doing within Apex zones. People are losing their valuables and have to be on the move. Javi works with the Coalition on Homelessness, which connects unhoused people with resources for permanent living solutions. As we go through alleyways that are usually heavily populated, we'll discuss the city's response to homelessness in relation to APEC and compare it to the resources the community actually needs.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
You haven't seen the what?
The UN Plaza like that before.
In terms of it being like with people playing ping pong and stuff?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah, they got all those outdoor things.
I was talking to some guys the other day, and they were like, this is the first time that we've seen like this area usable, and they're like working out on the stuff.
I know, it's a trip.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see people out. I mean, I was just talking to somebody, and I don't know if this is true, but it's like they got the park rangers there now too.
Yeah, dude, I was talking to them yesterday.
Yeah, and
federal,
so I'm thinking it's like someone said like, well, it's a skate park, so they redesignated them to there. I don't know.
I think they may have redesignated some areas to be federal land, at least for this conference, so they have jurisdiction over it, because they can like they said like, yeah, we're gonna crack hard, like down harder than San Francisco police have done in the past.
Yeah, because they got real embarrassed about that Lincoln Center.
What happened with Lincoln Center?
Well, they had during the pandemic, I think they had like they opened up the Tenderloin Lincoln Center in the UN Plaza, right? So it was a place where people would go for like resources and stuff, you know. But we went to a pretty decent sized encampment last time, which was like pretty much the only people we encountered, but it was like 10 folks, and it was unclear whether like folks, whether they were gonna come back
to that area,
whether like the city workers, like the police, were gonna come back and hot, because people hadn't been offered shelter and stuff. So I'm interested what they're about their placement too, because they're like right outside the zone.
So what's the zone?
I was just gonna look it up right here, because I get confused about where the traffic route, like rerouting thing ends and when the actual zone of the conference begins. So let me double check this.
And so, okay, so it's the zone of the conference, and is there like certain like rules about, because Apex happening, certain things have to happen with the people that would usually be there?
Yeah, so like it starts at Market.
Can I see
yeah,
that?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the zone where it's like where like basically people are being moved out.
Yeah, so from 2nd Street to 5th Street.
Okay.
Is but what we've seen is that like down the major blocks that are leading up to the zone, they're completely like cleared. And it was just, it's an opportunity for the city to have expanded shelter beds, because they're taking so much different precautions for the folks who are attending the conference, but for the low-income people in the SoMa area and in and around that zone, it's a huge inconvenience about, like, day-to-day living.
I mean, trying to get around.
Yeah,
the city,
right.
Yeah.
Or, like, getting food or medicine delivered. It's like people have to do it on foot and, like, to get to places that they need, that they use every day, it's like, it's bad for them too. But for us, we're experiencing it as just another sweep opportunity, but this time they're not focusing on shelter.
And so what is, like, when people say,
like you said,
yeah, they always protest this place.
What is this place?
This is for this is a hotel, so it's hotel workers that are often protesting because they
like
do
unionizing.
Local too.
So when you when they organize these sweeps, have they organized sweeps like this before?
The most comparable thing that that people are highlighting is like the 2016 Super Bowl event when it came to Levi's Stadium. The people around that area were displaced in a pretty harsh way, right?
When you say harsh, like, what does that mean?
Communities, tent encampments were scattered.
Yeah.
So, like, folks had a hard time, like, navigating however long, you know, that event, you know, that was probably several days.
Yeah.
Also, it was a logistical problem for homeless people because the city would prioritize getting some people around that area into shelter beds and kick other people off the wait list.
And so it's just like randomly, basically?
Yeah. Yeah, so it was an opportunity for them to expand
shelter
then. But instead of expanding it, they just did musical chairs with people's lives.
So where do people go? Like when they do a sweep, like they're doing now with APEC, and they're moving people from one area to where? Is it always to a shelter? No,
that's the problem, right? So, like, the frustrating part about sweeps in general is that the street cleaning, which is necessary, right? Cleaning is necessary, results in folks just shuffling from one alley to the next, right?
Yeah. Just like alleys out of sight. So it's not like APEC isn't being used as an opportunity for San Francisco to really think about housing. It's just like, let's just move people out of sight into these alleyways.
Yeah, and it's like really sweeping people under the rug, right?
Yeah.
Because it's about hiding homeless people for a week and not seriously confronting the issue, you know, afterwards, right?
It seems though that I've talked to just San Franciscans that don't really, I maybe understand everything that's going on and just see the streets being cleaner and they're like happy about it. Do you think there is any actually like good being done, or it's just gonna, it's like you're suppressing it just for a moment and it's just gonna burst up again?
I think that people who are like cheering that they don't see homeless people for a week are operating in bad faith.
Yeah.
Because they're saying, wow, look how aesthetically nice this is. Why can't they be like this all the time?
Yeah.
You see what happens when we put our best foot forward and we show people that we're a good place for tourism.
Yeah.
They know that this is temporary.
Yeah.
They know that it doesn't work to just tell a homeless person to move because they're still homeless.
Yeah.
It's like the idea of housing people doesn't even come into their mind, right? Like, if they do offer like some kind of shelter, what we experience with talking to folks is that there's like a notion that the city has been pushing in response to the injunction and to the lawsuit that we have, is that people who are voluntarily homeless.
Can you explain that term? What do you mean voluntarily homeless?
We were granted the injunction after we filed the lawsuit to stop the city from doing sweeps until like the trial. And so what the city tried to do and has been doing is highlighting the term voluntary and involuntary homelessness. Because what they have been saying is that if you're involuntarily homeless, then you weren't offered shelter and you can't be told to move. They can deem you voluntarily homeless if they have it listed that they offered you a shelter, bed, and you refused
it. Okay.
But what we're arguing is that, and what we have been talking to folks about and learning, is that the shelter offers that they give are often inappropriate, like most of the time.
Inappropriate how?
So like, for example, like if someone is living outside, they've been living in the same place or same area for a long time and they have a pet, and that shelter bed that day doesn't allow pets. Yeah, just like meeting people's specific needs is how you get people to like, to really gain stability, you know? Yeah, just like meeting people's specific needs is how you get people to like, to really gain stability, you know?
So, because you've done a lot of outreach, I'm curious how you actually go about doing that. But I was talking to this guy, Del Seymour from Code Tenderloin, the other day, and he's like, one of the questions that he asked people is like, what do you need to get off the street? Rather than just prescribing, like, this is what you need. So what are some of the reasons that people get of why they're like, one, well, I guess why they're on the street, and then two, what they need to get off the street.
Right. Well, that's a good question. And it's something that we talk to our housed neighbors about, or I mean, like our housed allies about, and our potential housed allies, is that like, you know, I work full time and I'm a paycheck away from like being on the street.
Yeah.
You feel me? Like if I can't afford to miss a paycheck, because rent is
crazy, insane,
right? Yeah. So it's like, as a umbrella, it's like rent is not going down, it's only going up. You know, there's a lot of structural issues at play there. But yeah, a lot of people say like, have walked in and said, I had a medical emergency and I couldn't afford it. Because I didn't have insurance and then I was out of a job. You know, there's a lot of different reasons that people lose their housing. And then once you lose, I think the big problem is once you lose your housing, getting it back is almost really impossible.
Yeah, because it's like, how do you get a job from that point?
Right.
If you're not able to keep yourself clean.
Exactly, right? So, for sure. I mean, substance use is not...
I was actually just talking initially about physically taking a shower.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
also, I guess it parlays into substance use. Like,
right.
It's
a result in the... It's a cause and a result of homelessness.
Yeah, I'm curious about that too. So do you think, like... homelessness precedes substance abuse, or substance abuse precedes homelessness?
I think it's both. Mm-hmm.
You've seen both cases.
For sure. I mean, you know, if you are having any kind of behavioral health disorder, you know, that can jeopardize your housing.
Yeah.
Even in like apartments, like around the city and stuff, you know? So yeah, San Francisco has really good tenant protections compared to other cities. But to get housing is impossible for a lot of folks. You know?
Yeah. Do you think San Francisco has enough beds to house people?
No. So they...
Because there's like, what, 7,000 unhoused people in San Francisco currently, or 7,000, like 800 something like that. Do you know how many unused beds there are in San Francisco? I don't have that.
I don't have that number on me either, and it's kind of in flux sometimes.
Yeah, I'm curious what that would be.
Yeah, and I think we have been like trying to do some work around requesting that information and having it made public. Like I'm sure other folks have done like sunshine requests about like specifically which availability is there, because another frustrating thing at Sweeps is going back to the specificity of an offer, right?
Yeah.
So when folks come around, like, you know, the 13, 14 person crews that they send that have San Francisco PD, the fire person has a crew chief, DPW sends like two trucks, MTA is out there to block the traffic. The Department of Emergency Management, sometimes the Department of Public Health is out there. So you've got about like 14, 15 like city shifts getting dedicated to sweeps every day.
And like, what if some of that money went into housing?
Right, like that's why money always goes into like law enforcement and not into housing, because we think we can throw police at the housing problem every time.
And that's not addressing like root causes.
Right, and the police shouldn't even be at these sweeps, right? Mm-hmm. Because the sweeps aren't violent. The violence that's getting perpetrated is the city like stamping on people's rights by confiscating their property and threatening them with a citation or arrest, even if they don't have another place to go. You know?
So this is a controversial take that I've heard, and I'm curious your take on this. So this is like from, I remember hearing this take like from a friend who went to like Berkeley like ages ago. Mm-hmm. And he was like, at a certain point, we should say like, no one should live in these conditions and should force people into housing. Mm-hmm. Even if it like if it doesn't fit all their needs, because like in restoring human decency, you have to take away rights. I think maybe that like, or like freedoms, which is super controversial, but I'm curious like how you would respond to that.
Well, I think that is an interesting idea in that I'm trying to picture it without those like that like compulsory housing. It sounds like a really, really nice way to say jail.
Yeah, exactly. No, no. No, that's a really good point.
But I mean, even for people like, I mean, this has come up in a certain way that has been tried by certain supervisors, board of supervisors, to be passed as like the, you know, to expand the like 5150.
What's that?
So like for folks who who experience like psychiatric emergencies.
Yeah.
And if they're a danger to themselves or to others, or they're deemed that, they're held for like 3 days.
Yeah.
And then given like an evaluation. And so a lot of times it's like people coming down from substances. So they're almost like detoxing and getting like some kind of treatment, and then they're just kind of let out. Mm-hmm. But if you 5150 them, then I think you have you can hold people for longer.
Right. So which then just becomes like
it's a mental health jail, yeah. Right? So it's like that has been a controversial thing for us too, because if folks are a real threat to themselves or others, and they've been deemed that way by and evaluated by that in that way, you know, of course there's situations where people, you know, are rightfully 5150. Yeah. But I think what people are concerned about, any kind of forced city action,
is like this, when does it
this
stop?
This alley's usually got a bunch of folks, and you can see right down, like straight down.
And
the
you haven't been able to do that beforehand.
No. Wow. It's like these alleys are places where it's like where people go for refuge when they get swept. So it's like if you're set up on the street.
So then where are they going? If these are the places that they go when they get swept.
A lot of people are in the freeway. A lot of times people know when to lay low, because it's like a lot of the same DPW, a lot of the same like police officers. So, you know, and people get swept so frequently, they know that they need to like lay low as far as like being in a big group. And, so yeah, they just like go to the alleys for a little bit, kind of more isolated places.
So where, and then they move like back. Where is everyone right now? Where is it, like where have they gone?
I think they just kind of fractured and went to see. When you're living on the street, you would have to be able to, you know, be familiar with, you know, what shop owners call the cops more than others, right? And like that's why it's so important to have like encampment communities, because they really watch out for each other and like. You know, warn people about certain areas, or say like, oh yeah, the cops are always there, don't go there. So like I think they're just fractured, but so you won't see like large encampments, but you know, we're seeing random tents like pop like here and there, and you know, the isolation factor is real, you know.
Yeah. something I was hearing Del say as well yesterday is like, when you're on the street, it's actually like a very extremely social experience, because rather than being in your room surrounded by four walls, you're like seeing people you know like cross by you every day. And so there is like a big community aspect, and I think like what you just said confirms that. It's like everywhere you go, no matter what situation you are in, you want to be around people. What is this? I've been seeing a lot of like tinfoil around the area.
Tinfoil is just a kind of a platform people use to mix their substances in, so it could be different tracks. Those are kind of like the harder ones, but tinfoil.
I've been seeing a lot of tinfoil, like, or people like heating up tinfoil.
So it's like it's just so easily accessible, you know.
What are the drugs that people like are like that you're seeing on the street right now?
I mean, usually, actually, I forgot it this time, but usually when we do outreach, like, we bring Narcan. Because there's a lot of heroin, there's a lot of crack. Methamphetamine is big, but then, you know, the huge one is anything getting mixed with fentanyl, you know, or, you know, using fentanyl in general.
Is fentanyl something people seek out, or do you think fentanyl is something people avoid?
A lot of people avoid it.
Yeah.
People are scared of it. They know people who have overdosed or passed away who've used fentanyl. Some people do seek it out because they're like longtime users and it's like super, super potent.
Yeah.
And some folks do want to avoid it, but it gets mixed in and they can't really. Some people don't have access to Narcan. It's only recently that like people have been equipped with Narcan.
Yeah. And Narcan is basically something that like diffuses the opioid.
Yeah.
Does it like if you were to overdose, it just helps. It's like harm reduction basically.
Yeah. So I guess it's like, I don't know the exact, and that's actually interesting because the encampment we're going to is right outside the harm reduction therapy center. They do some really great work.
And what, when you say encampment, what does that usually mean?
It's just a group of tents, basically, and like people kind of come and go. Not everybody at the tents are like, you know, live there, but people kind of bounce from encampment to encampment. So,
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
That guy should remember me the other day. I forgot exactly what. Yeah, and I talked to him before, but he's kind of popping in and around and stuff. So. But yeah, there's another one, Merlin, which I think is that one. Yeah.
Do you know like a lot of people's like names out here too?
Sometimes when we go to so many, it's just like tough. Hey. Is anybody in there? It's Javi, Coalition on Homelessness. Oh, this just looks like stuff. Hey. How's it going, sir? Hey, my name's Javi. I'm with the Coalition on Homelessness. Uh-huh. You know, I've just been going around here. We've been walking around. Like, have you heard about like the APEC conference that's going on?
Did
they have folks like police or hot team come around here and like tell you you had to move or anything?
No, no. Oh, okay. I mean, hot team did come by and they yesterday took some of the information.
Yeah.
But no police do. Police rolled by in their car. I'm a San Francisco, living here 30 years.
Yeah.
So I know. No, I haven't been bothered.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because, you know, like,
because I know that that thing is going on.
Yeah. Have you heard of others? But they haven't told you to like move or anything. Is that because is that where you?
Yeah, stay? That's not mine. But there are other people that are here.
Yeah.
You know, there's another guy and a girl that was here just a minute ago.
Oh yeah.
I think they are there. They had a tent over there.
Oh okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, because we were trying to see if folks were being told to move. I think you're right outside the zone of where the conference is. So.
Okay.
But is this where you usually stay?
I usually don't sit here. I'm in the shelter.
Oh, okay.
But I've been out in the from the shelter for a little while.
Okay, for sure. Why have you been out from the shelter?
Huh?
Why out from the shelter?
Oh, I have a problem, you know. They don't allow my sleeping bag. They allow their own blanket. There are some restrictions that I can't. I'm also a substance user, you know, and I'm just having a little problem, so I just took out for a few weeks because I just got here.
Okay.
And I'm just trying to reset.
Absolutely. Yeah. I didn't catch your name though.
Alvin.
Javi.
Javi?
Yes.
Javi. Okay, nice to meet you.
Sam, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
For sure. Thank you.
Have a good one. When he said, like, I'm a substance user, so I've had like a little problems with the shelter. Do a lot of shelters not allow that you have to be like cleaned into the shelter?
Yeah. But I mean, you definitely can't use air.
Yeah.
But then that's where it gets tricky because you have to check in every 48 hours. Otherwise, you lose your spot.
He was like very open, just like, oh yeah, I'm using.
Yeah.
Is that something that you see a lot of people pretty open about?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, no. Because I think a lot of like advocacy, there's a lot of advocacy groups around like the reduction of stigma. So like, for example, in San Francisco has the Drug Users Union.
Is it people who are currently using drugs?
Yeah, so they're like—
Wait, currently?
Yeah. They, like I know folks who are in it. And they, they advocate for like stigma reduction, you know,
what kind of
needle
like
exchanges
are like
whole gamut. Yeah, like from cocaine, crack, heroin, methamphetamine, fentanyl.
And what are they when they say like we're in support of like the destigmatization of these drugs, are they saying like all these drugs should be allowed across the board? Are they like basically looking for decriminalization of all drugs, or like what's the angle of what they're looking for?
I think they would say that like harm reduction is about like facing the reality that people use drugs and that not everybody who uses drugs or even like frequents it enough to be labeled an addict is like struggling with their addiction. Like some people are really highly functioning.
Some people don't struggle with addiction.
Right. Yeah. So
they're addicted,
like,
but they're not struggling.
That's, I mean, that's how it is, right? And everybody's body reacts differently, right? So it's like, but also at the same time,
you see, like, I mean, like you walk around San Francisco and you see like so many people really, really struggling. Right. I think mainly because of addiction.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
Like,
yeah.
Is that something that they acknowledge as well?
Yeah, for sure. And it's like it kind of goes back to like these reinforcing, like these intersecting problems that come out that result in addiction, right? So it's like, yeah, it could be that somebody lost their housing and then started to become addicted and then they can't get housing again. So it exacerbates it and it's hard to get into treatment. So at the same time as they're saying like, we should reduce stigma, we're also saying like we need to expand treatment access for the people who do want it.
Right.
Exactly.
So what is this area we're about to go into?
So this is Merlin, and it was an alley where we found a lot of folks last time. There's a little less this time. We walked all down 7th last week before this, and then so today and up 6th and stuff. There's almost no one on the way, like even in the alleys going down 7th. I think we saw one tent coming down on 6th.
I'm just like, where is everyone going?
But this is all the folks that we found. And then, they just spread out that way. It was actually interesting because when we went up to the Embarcadero, so we went all across Market, like all around the zone, you know?
Yeah.
And so like when we went up there, we ran into this guy who was on like 4th Street.
Yeah.
And he was literally asking us, like, because we had the map, and he was literally asking us, like, okay, so this is the zone? Okay, what's the closest I can get to the zone without them, like, screwing with me? And we were like, I guess 2nd Street? And he's like, cool, I'm gonna go to, like, 3rd Street. You know, so it was like...
People know.
People are very, like...
aware.
Yeah, if you've been swept once, you've been swept, like, probably
a dozen times. Bunch of times. So when you go to like those areas, what are like some of the questions that you ask to see that how you can help?
Typically, for a sweep, that wasn't today, I mean, conference thing, a scheduled sweep, we go up and we say, we ask, were you given like notification? And we look around for notices because they're supposed to be told 3 days in advance.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's notices by the city that saying, hey, we're doing a sweep of this area.
Yeah, they used to, they would post, they're supposed to post 3 days, notices 3 days in advance that they're going to sweep the area.
Yeah.
And then on the notices, it like spells out what the procedure is.
Yeah.
Which is that they can come back, that if they're not in their tent, but their stuff has to be moved, their property has to be moved, that they bag it, and then they tag it with the information about when and where they can pick up their stuff.
Right.
Which is like a big source of contention that we have in the city's practices because people would get their stuff either thrown away or just confiscated and they can't find it. Actually, a lot of people have filed like administrative claims because they figured out like, at small claims, that's the only way you can like kind of itemize what was taken from them. So some people
people win in small claims court?
Some people have been, I think we've helped folks we put a packet together that kind of goes through like the legal process. Yeah. It's like, it takes a long time, but we've had, like we just don't have the capacity to like help folks.
All 7,000 people.
Because like, once like that started being known of a thing,
everybody came in
was like, they took this stuff, they took that stuff, and we're just like,
they took my Ferrari.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, like, you know, I was literally just talking to somebody yesterday whose tent was taken out and it had his Hep C medicine in it. So it's like,
I got stuff like you actually need.
Like the last picture you have with somebody that you loved, you know, like,
yeah.
At the sweeps, we ask them if they were given notices, if they had any property taken, were they offered shelter?
Everyone who is swept is offered shelter.
No. So everyone who's swept is listed as being offered shelter, but they can kind of mark off half attempts. What we're saying is that they can mark off half attempts.
With the whole like, oh, if you're in a wheelchair, you have a top
bunk. Right, yeah.
I see.
But at the same time, it's like, you know, how much are you gonna be inclined to offer, to accept a shelter offer with 5 policemen like hovering around
Like, you wanna go into the shelter, you wanna move.
Right.
Well,
you want us to go away? Maybe you take the shelter. So, it's like, it's a very like intimidating presence that they have, and they do that on purpose, right? So that's one thing. And then we ask them, did they tell you that you can come back, right? And that's like a huge thing that we have been trying to, you know, that we've been going back and forth with the city about, which is that like what we found out is that the police and the DPW, who are like the main component of these teams that do the operations, they are not given training, right?
On how to do this properly.
Of how to do it this properly, and then as a, just on the whole, like how to deal with folks who are unhoused, you know?
Yeah, what do you think of, there's like massive gates over there sectioning off the city.
I was just here Sunday.
What do you think about that?
Well, I spoke at the rally and they...
Which rally?
It was, Sunday they started at the Embarcadero, is the No to APEC rally with the... And then it was combined with the folks protesting for Gaza. So it was pretty big. But yeah, they went from the Embarcadero and we marched down to
the Moscone Center.
Yeah, yeah.
What did you say?
Just that, yeah, I mean, it's really bad that they cleared like these homeless encampments and like you won't see any homeless people for a week, you know, because they're being swept away and hidden. But these problems will still persist. And also what's going on inside the conference, which is like gonna result in homeless people being screwed over even more. And then of course,
what do you think is going on inside the conference that will contribute to that?
It's all the most powerful, wealthy, elite CEOs and, you know, like state officials.
That, and you can see the wealth and power if you look at the motorcades.
Yeah, for
sure. I literally saw a 40-car motorcade the other day. Like, I kid you not, like just row after row of cars and motorcycles. And like, there is a lot of money. There's like probably millions of dollars being put into security alone for just one of these people.
Right, exactly.
There's the barriers right there.
Yeah, they're basically just coming up with more economic agreements. And the way that we got into this crisis of homelessness was through like the constant barrage of like free trade and like trickle down economics got us to where we are today.
A lot of cities around the US point to San Francisco and are like, look at San Francisco. They have like the most liberal policies, yet the most homelessness. How would you respond to that? And like, how is it more, I guess, more complex than just that statement?
Liberal policies are not very good in general. You know, I definitely don't like conservative policies, but my experience in San Francisco is that even within, like as a whole, we tend to vote more progressively than other cities, certainly. But within the city, there are still like, you know, even though we call them, it's the moderates versus the progressives.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot more elements of like right-wing corporate influence that show how much power you can exert even though you don't have the numbers. So like, yeah, we will vote for progressive measures on the state and national level, but there's a lot of local ballot measures that don't get national attention but really fundamentally squeeze like vulnerable populations. Like for example, on the ballot we have coming up in March, you know, in an effort to address the opioid crisis, you know, on the ballot, it's gonna be, we have to vote whether people have to do mandatory, you know, drug treatment and testing in order to get their GA benefits.
What's GA?
Their general assistance benefits. So folks who get welfare benefits, now you have to take a drug test to get your benefits.
Right.
So they're trying to save a little bit of money and crack down on folks who they say, oh, all they do is spend their money on drugs, so let's not give them any money and see how they like that. So it's like a punitive measure that I thought we left in the 80s with the drug war, right?
Is there do you think a solution would be guided ways that the money can be, I mean, you have like food stamps and stuff, like, or like, you know, housing stipends. Like, do you think that is a solution to still give benefits to those people, but protect against that being spent on drugs?
There was a measure that I think when Governor Newsom was the mayor, so he tried to do this thing, or he did this thing where instead of, it was called Care Not Cash, where it was the same kind of deal. Yeah.
Care Not Cash, what was that meant to do? It was the same idea.
Like that people will, like instead of the money that people get monthly from the city, that you could get into like outpatient treatment or inpatient treatment or something like that more accessible, And so on his face, it sounds okay, but a lot of folks are just gonna get punished for having drugs in their system when they're trying to get their GA stuff. And yeah, I mean, there are definitely cases where
and
folks
how
like,
do you think they are punished?
So the punishment would just be not getting the money.
Right.
Because they would have to change the treatment options that we have and the amount of treatment access that folks can like grab. Yeah. We'd have to change our whole system for that to work. Because some people are gonna go into treatment and it won't be the right type of treatment. So one thing that we've been pushing for a really long time is the safe consumption sites. And where those things are is like kind of what the Tenderloin Lincoln Center that I was talking about earlier was supposed to emulate, right? So it's like we have been pushing for safe consumption sites for decades, right? And like we've seen in like Vancouver and then in like Portugal, I think, like the decriminalization of drug use just makes people safer, you know?
I imagine it definitely helps to de-risk like the chance of dying or seriously like injuring yourself or diseases.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
How does it address the core thing of like people are becoming in America more addicted to drugs than ever before?
Right. So I think like what the biggest like notion that people who are detractors of safe consumption sites is that like they imagine a safe injection site to be a place that would resemble like how they think a crack house would look.
Right.
Right. Where people are just, here's base. Here's yeah. like, no one can touch me. Yeah. If I'm here, I can do all the drugs I want and there's no rules. But actually right there at Glide Memorial, some years back, we were so close to getting
a safe consumption site.
And Glide Memorial put one together, like a mock safe consumption site. So I toured it. And what they explained was that they got a full behavioral health medical staff, people with lived experience with drug use, who would also be there to help supervise people's use. And then you have like a place where you can enjoy your high, yeah. right? Which is just called like the cool room or the chill room, where you just like have a place where you can sit and people are around in case, you know, you do like have an overdose, it's like
there's someone there for
right
you.
Exactly, because right now what happens is it's like people are in camps right. who are using, they look out for each other when they use, right? Yeah. Like the safe consumption site also
is there examples of it so you mentioned the safe consumption sites in Vancouver
yeah.
being successful.
Yeah.
Is Vancouver like how is their opiate crisis right now?
I mean, I think the numbers like slightly lower and then just leveled out though. Like people weren't
becoming,
more comfortable with
yeah.
addiction than before. They just know they had a place to go. And also like the biggest component that is left out of the resources is it's not just like medical staff. You got housing experts at those places, right? So it would be like a really dynamic, you know, place where it's like people can go there for a shower, right? They can go there for like—
It's like services
it's
for
services,
the-
yeah.
The most vulnerable population.
Yeah,
it's like
yeah.
that's essentially.
Yeah.
And so if
and some
you
people
were
use
to
just to like just because the withdrawals are bad are just
hard.
So bad, right? And it's easier to do that than like change your whole life around.
Yeah.
You know, and then the other thing is like harm reduction is the official policy of San Francisco, like public health policy.
Yeah.
But the treatment access to get a treatment bed
Those programs
takes about 2 months.
Yeah.
Like the average wait time is
by
about
that
2 months.
Time, it's like, oh, like fuck that.
Yeah. And then also you need to check in with them like routinely. And you need to call your case manager at this yeah. time every day. You know, like there's a lot of hoops people have to jump through. And you're right. Sometimes it's just easier to just go score a bag, you know?
Yeah.
So I think like being intentional about like meeting people where they're at
yeah.
and then trying to get them to another place, I think should be the policy instead of just seeing how bad we can punish people until they like figure
and,
out
you know,
like,
that
all
never
right,
really
you
works.
Got me.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind
and
of
I guess, but you do have, so you I feel like you have examples on both sides of like carrot working
yeah,
and
yeah.
stick working.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you look at somewhere like Singapore.
Oh yeah.
Which just has like the death sentence
yeah,
and like
yeah,
there's
yeah.
no one using over there,
right?
Right,
yeah.
But then you look at places like Thailand or like other Southeast Asian countries that have similar policies, and it's still like fairly rampant.
Yeah.
And so it's like it's almost like it, I feel like you also have to just like look at the, it's like hard to look at one, like another country and like die, like say like, oh, this worked there, so it will work here. But like you have to like look at also like the cultural differences between two areas they're not going to be necessarily one-to-one.
You're right. And actually, I was just talking to somebody who was working in Singapore. They were saying, Singapore, the overwhelming majority of its housing is public housing. If you're not constantly thinking about survival, you can live your life with human dignity.
You've been working in this for like a while.
Uh-huh.
What do you think was like a misconception you had about homelessness coming into it? And then like, what do you think is like one of the biggest takeaways or like biggest learning lessons that if someone were to see like this video or just, you know, see videos of San Francisco or just hear things about homelessness, like what do you think you would want just people in general to understand about homelessness that you now understand?
Yeah, so when I first started working in the Tenderloin with homeless people, I think that I was approaching, or my mindset was like, this is exciting that I'm gonna get to help save homeless people. And because of my studies, I'll be able to tell them what the solution is, and then I'll be a hero.
Yeah.
But what I learned and what I understand now is that like, you know, your housing status doesn't reveal as much about you as like I think a lot of the general public assumes. And by that I mean, you know,
it's not your identity.
Yeah, right. And it's like at the Coalition on Homelessness, like the way that like what informs our campaigns is doing outreach and talking to homeless people who know what the solutions are, right? Like they know what solutions are needed, you know, to change their community, right? So it's like for example, one of the things that we're working on is water access, right? It's something that people don't think about. Not everyone needs a blanket, right? Like not everyone needs like, you know, a dollar or $2 so they can get a bite to eat or something like that. It's like, you know, these like really systemic changes are taken from like the leadership of homeless people in their community because they have real communities and
they understand what they need.
And they understand the needs of their community.
And right. So like asking what you need
right.
is probably more important than here you go.
Yeah, exact. In communities where there's a lot of homeless people are the leaders of like the advocacy for their change, for the change in their community is like, it's more important than trying to be, you know, the savior of poor folks.
Thank you so much for listening. If you haven't already, make sure to subscribe, rate the podcast 5 stars, and share with a friend. If you have any questions or comments, DM us at Finding Founders Podcast on Instagram, LinkedIn, or Facebook. Finding Founders is produced and hosted by me, Samuel Donner.
Our audio editing team lead is Ashley Jimenez, with support from
Jessica Morales, Miley Lipton,
Sui Pan,
Kenny Ray,
Josie Yo,
Matt Fernandez,
and Merritt Hill.
Our outreach and research team lead is Desiree Nunez, with support from
Marissa Granados,
Monica Lee,
Sarah Tiersma,
and Yao Liu.
To see more of what we're up to, subscribe to our newsletter at findingfounders.co. Thanks again for listening, and see you next week.